the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me say Clemens Schleivis.
Well done.
Was that good?
Yeah, very nice.
Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Figgets.
Next to him, we've got Hezekiah McMurray, who is joining us today.
Hello.
Across the table, we've got Rob Arbertier.
Guten Abend, Mike.
And our special guest for today is Clemens Schleivis.
Thank you so much. What a warm welcome.
I had to say that at the beginning, or I just would not remember how to announce that. But Clemens, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Clemens is from Munich, and
yes.
You have a studio called The Private Room.
Right.
And you're out here because they're shooting a reality TV series. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what
you're doing? Yeah, this project is called Big Boy, the band. And it's this weird rock, glam rock thing in Germany. It's kind of big, this whole MySpace situation. It's really like a huge fan base. And we were invited to come here, and like they want to shoot a reality TV show about this weird German band coming to America and like performing and trying to make it here.
That's great, and that's awesome.
And are you totally in the band?
Cool. No, I'm producing.
Are you producing?
Yes.
Cool.
And so are you in the reality series? Do they?
Yeah, sure.
That's cool.
Yeah, like yesterday I was at Les Deux Club, you know, this club Les Deux. And yeah, cool. Totally cool to be here.
And how many gigs are you guys playing?
Pardon?
How many gigs are you playing?
At the moment, I think it's 4 or 5 gigs confirmed, but it's more and more coming in. So, like, yeah, every day something new.
That's exciting.
It's really cool.
That is really cool. Yeah. Well, we're going to have a link to Clemens, his website. It's really cool. It's a great website. Just make sure you have the latest flash. But it's really cool. It's a great website. And who are some of the other acts that you've produced or recorded?
Mainly German European stuff. I don't know if you know some of that. Yeah, maybe.
Go ahead, drop names because it'll sound impressive.
Like the only like American stuff.
No, you can drop German names.
German names?
Yeah, we're heard in Germany.
Whatever. Like I did this like Karen David, Natural, Maxway. Oh man. What else? I mix a lot of stuff, you know, like rock stuff.
Great.
Yes.
Cool. Well, great. And you know what? I'm sure you've just impressed a bunch of Germans. and thanks. Actually, I got an email from Clemens that he was coming out here and wanted to know if he could be on the podcast. And we're not picky. And so we said.
We are picky.
Thanks a lot.
So you had heard the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Oh,
sure.
Cool.
Yeah, and he wrote a really, really kind letter about the podcast, and I said, come on.
So you actually have been posting these things each?
Yeah, I do
each
post
time
them.
We do it?
Wow.
I didn't realize these were actually
more
going
than
out.
Just your mum downloads
it. That's right.
My mum downloaded it. Mine didn't. She died a couple years ago.
Not because of the podcast.
Yeah, no.
But, why don't you tell us a little about your studio? Because that's the one thing that really impressed me about your desk that you got. And it's a lot of analog gear. You get a really good aggressive sound. I really am impressed by the sound that you get.
Yeah. I actually started out with Pro Tool system. I had this Mix Plus system.
Right.
And even then I am like this control surface. And I sold all that stuff and bought analog stuff more and more, you know. And yeah, I just love it. It's so much. I think it's so much better, really. Especially for the rock stuff.
Right.
I work a lot with tape, too. Like, I have this Studer A800.
Uh-huh.
And,
nice.
Yeah, I really mix like this, you know? Like, I put everything to the Studer and mix from the Studer, you know?
Sure.
So, I don't use...
What other way was there?
Yeah, sure. I love it. Mix to a half inch, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And this the mixing board is a Helios, vintage Helios. Console.
Yes, great console.
It's the one from Hansa Studio Berlin, you know, with all the David Bowie stuff.
David Bowie,
Tony Visconti, David Bowie signed the console.
Oh, did he?
Did he really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's cool.
It's a huge sounding board. It's really amazing. Like this Helios is really different from API and Neve. I think API has this punch in the bottom end. You right. know, Neve is this mid, aggressive mid compression sound. And I think this Helios is just wide. Really, like, even mono signals, it's just huge. It has this 3D sound.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It's really cool.
And you got that from the studio? You found out they were shutting down or closing the room? Or?
Yeah, no. I have this guy in Munich. He's called Charlie Bohemity. He serves all that old stuff and, like, has a lot of Neve and old Neumann microphones and stuff like this. And he bought this desk when they, I think they bought an SSL instead. I don't know, it's some years ago. So he has it in storage. And, I found it at his place and said, like, what's that? and I bought it and he started to restore it. And it took over 1 year. It was really,
wow.
It was in bad shape, but all the cabling was done new and totally recapped. And it's really great. It's a cool board.
Well, if you go to his website, and we're going to link it to your name on the podcast page, you'll be able to check out his website and listen to his music. And it's really cool. It's big sounding. It has a really good aggressive rock and roll.
It's nice to hear young producers saying, "Oh, tried digital and I like analog better." It's great. It's happened such a lot.
You know,
but, like, completely. I like that. It's really encouraging.
It is, because it keeps the. Keeps it
stops
alive.
His laptop junkies.
Hey. Can't we all just get along? One thing I noticed on your website was the picture where you have all those different amp heads for the guitars. Mm-hmm. What kind of amps do you have in your studio?
Yeah, like for this rock stuff, I have the Dietzel amp. Mm-hmm. Do you know that?
No.
Dietzel and like Bogner Überschall?
Bogner.
But we rented out some more stuff, like, we had everything. It was really stacked up to the roof.
Great. That's great. While you're here, what's big in Germany right now, like, with rock and roll and with music in general?
Yeah, I mean, Germany, it's kind of very US oriented, you know? It's like everything what is, like, huge here is huge there too. So, but it's getting more and more German artists too, you know, like, even German speaking artists.
Right.
It's getting bigger, yeah.
The thing I always liked about when I was touring was, the live music scene in Germany has always been kicking. It's always been kicking. They had a really good, large club scene before we got our House of Blues scene. And, it just seemed, you know, German festivals and things like that that haven't quite caught on. I mean, they're starting to catch on here, but how important is live music in Germany? It seems like it's really important.
Yeah, I mean, like, the one difference I really found out here, like, it's in Germany, this whole live situation is much better for bands, you know. The clubs are much more, like, open to bands and try to be nice to them and treat them right. And it's not, in US, it's so much more competitive, and they are, like, this whole touring thing is, in Germany, quite good, actually. But I think this whole recording industry and making, creating music, that's far behind US. That's really true.
Are your studios, are they closing left and right, like the studios out here? Because there's a lot of studios that are...
Yeah, definitely. I can't think of one big studio still there. They all closed down. It's only, like, little producer studios. I mean, like mine. Mine studio is not a big studio. It's just mine producer studio. So there are not many of the huge studios left. And we had, like, that was before my time,
right.
But, like, in the 70s, 80s, like, in Munich, especially in Munich, they had great studios, yeah. But none of them is there anymore.
Is that happening throughout Europe, or is there particularly?
No, I think that's throughout Europe, yeah.
Wow, sounds like they're facing some of the same
I think, problems. Yeah, absolutely, it's totally the same. Yeah.
And finally, last question before, you know, while I'm drilling you on the German music scene. What about gear, the price of gear over there versus the price of gear here, especially with the way the dollar's changing?
Yeah. Like, for us at the moment, it's great to buy, like, product from US. The dollars, it's cool to shop. I mean, yeah.
I bought a lot of stuff.
And they use it as packing material. They use the dollars as packing material. They just wad them up and shove them inside the box.
Right. Yeah, right.
So while you're out here, you're looking for some...
Yeah, let's see if I can find something.
Let me tell you about eBay.
Yeah.
And customs, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the only problem.
Well, really, if he ships it back, you still, you know, just tell him it's a bunch of clothes. I don't know. Is it cheaper if you...
Are you saying he should lie, Mike? Are you trying to get him in trouble?
No. I would never.
After you learn to pronounce his name, you're going to get him in trouble? Of course, you've forgotten by now, haven't you?
No, I still remember his last name. Schleibis.
Very good.
Very true.
Say no more.
All that,
congratulations.
All that German beer when I was over there. Both glasses.
But, you know, to be honest, I don't want to mess with U.S. customs and this immigration authorities. When we came here, it was really hard.
Like, was it real?
Oh, they interviewed us for 2 hours or something.
Wow.
Like that.
Yeah. Wow.
It was really close to sending us back.
Really?
Yeah.
What, because of?
Yeah, because like, we are not tourists here, but we don't earn money either. So it's, we didn't have a working visa. Mm. And we came here as tourists, but it's no money involved in this. It's a pilot, you know. So.
And his full name is actually Clemens Mohammed Schleibis.
Yeah, I can tell you, those guys are really.
And he
really
was trying to buy some detonators, nothing analog.
I mean, to Europe, you can come and say like, I want to work. You can even take whatever you want with you. They don't care. It's really easy.
Right.
To take stuff out.
Yeah, like. Here, they're really strict.
Now, did you fly with gear?
So that's a problem.
We had flight cases.
Flight cases, in-ear monitoring system and all that stuff.
Wow.
Because that's really, from some of my friends that are still on the road, they are cracking down on some of that stuff. I mean, it's in the good old days, I remember, Rob, you know, when you do a little one-off, you can, you know, throw your keyboard case and, you know, send that as...
Carry on.
Yeah, seriously.
KX-88 is carry on. I mean,
really quick, when he tours, I remember when we used to tour together, his little hotel rig would be just road case. And
thing. Yeah, it still is.
But I bet that's just a nightmare now with all
it is now because
baggage fees.
They got to show up at the airport with tons of cash because every piece of luggage now costs something and he, you know, carries tons.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you made it. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll move on. We'll talk a little bit about gear. One thing I wanted to talk to you guys about is last time we talked about digital gear and how, there's not really a great used market for digital gear. And I wanted to bring up the fact that with the tough times that are with the economy right now, buying older gear, like older versions of software or older versions of computers that can run this is really a tremendous great buy right now. I went to the Guitar Center the other day and I bought like $600 worth of SoftSense and spent $200 and got like the VR1. I don't know if you're familiar with Big Fish Audio. It's a great sample playback instrument. Comes with like 22 gigs. It was $100. And the requirements to play it were basically a Windows XP system. And I wanted to ask you guys, do you have any older pieces of gear that you think are out there right now that you think would be like still like really important to your studio and something you could suggest to people who might be wanting to look out for, hey, buy this plugin or buy that plugin. It won't work on this, but it will.
A lot of people have been selling older GigaStudio systems with massive libraries. And that's actually still a really good buy. And, you know. Giga 3. When you finish your product, no one knows where the samples came from or, you know, what kind of hardware you used. And they're responsive machines that sound good.
Steinberg X-Phrase, if you can find that one, pick that up because that's actually doesn't tax your system that much. And it's a great, great weird little synth that does phrase sampling and looping and also
they don't make it anymore?
No, they don't make it anymore. But if you can, I've seen it online sometimes as cheap as like $100 or so. And it's a it doesn't tax your system and it works really good. It only needs like 1.4 gigahertz, Intel chip. And that's a really, really good buy. A couple other ones are like older versions of Reason are really, if you can find a version of Reason where you can't buy a used version of Reason, but like an older packaged version of Reason, that's actually really good too.
Well, the truth is too, you can still get really good older PCs running Windows XP that are completely fine for music, just like you can still do plenty on a G5. My main Pro Tools rig, like we talked about last time, is still on a G5.
I've got two Windows 98 machines that are still running Giga Studio 2.
That's great.
I've got some samples on that already dig, and I don't use them all day, every day, but sometimes I do, and they still work. They'll still come up. They're the only dorky looking ones, but they're fine.
Clemens, do you use any SoftSense?
I do.
What do you use?
At the moment, I use Logic Pro.
Okay.
So there's a lot of stuff included. So for me, that's enough because I do a lot of analog stuff. So. But yeah, let me think. Software, I don't know. The last thing I bought is it's not really like on topic now, but this Bobcat's K Stereo. Have you tried this? But the hardware box, it's kind of like a bit older, and it's fantastic. It's really.
What's it called?
It's a DD2 K Stereo thing from Bobcat's. Digital domain.
I'm not familiar.
It's really, it's fantastic, really.
What does it do?
It's like a stereo widening tool. But not, it doesn't work like all the other stuff. It's, it kind of extracts the real ambience from the, from the tracks. I don't know how he does it, but it's really cool.
You have to check it out. Stereo widening.
It's just, yeah.
Is it like a Dimension D type of an effect?
Yeah. It's, and
no, it's not chorus though. It's not the Dim Dog's chorus. Dimension D's chorus. Dim Dog, I call it. I have one. I still love it and use it.
Now I really think that's one of those secret weapon pieces. It's really, you put something in, it really comes out much better.
Really? It's not a secret anymore.
No, I really love it.
Great.
I just bought that.
I think it was a good VST synth. Is VST synth is Native Instruments Absinthe 1, not Absinthe 2.
Right.
Absinthe 1 had its original sound. It was Absinthe 2, they put the quasi stereo crap on everything. So the mono compatibility was horrible. But Absinthe 1 is really nice. If you can get that at a cheapie, it's great. They don't support it anymore. But when I bought it, they upgraded me to 2. And then my number one didn't work, and I had to pay them $160 to buy number one back. And they said, "Why do you want it?" I said, "It sounds better." And they kind of chuckled. And I said, "Well, listen to it. It does." And I think it does. It doesn't have any stereo stuff.
Well, the cool thing about buying older VST instruments and older plugins is, since the requirements are so low, technology with the newer notebooks and netbooks, and I have in front of me, and I'm going to post a picture. I've got a little netbook that's a 10-inch screen. It's the Asus. I'm running live on it, and I've got Complete 5 running on it, as well as Atmosphere and X-Phrase and all the really cool old free VST plugins. And it runs fine. You can't do a lot of tracks, but like with live, when you run live off of it, just freezer tracks, and it's plenty fast enough. And it's a great little setup, and I have the M-Audio Transit hooked up to it, so I can get 24-bit. 96K, and it's just a nice little setup. And most of it is possible because I'm running a lot of the older plugins on it. And it's just a really great setup. So if you're out there shopping for Christmas and you want to know what to buy somebody, visit your local guitar center or
buy them an A800.
Yeah.
No, there's some really, really great deals on. But anyhow, one last thing, and we'll wrap up this whole thing about great deals. What was the last piece of gear that you got for a really good deal, Bobby?
Sure, that's a great question. Well, this week, you mean?
Any time.
Well, this week I ended up buying components for my power supply, which I got at a good price. Good question. Don't know. Oh yeah, S90ES, a controller, Yamaha controller keyboard.
Really?
Got it for $1,500, brand new from Guitar Center.
What happened to your other controller?
KX88. I've retired. It's in my live room now.
KX88.
Anybody want it? I'm selling it. You can buy it. No, I'm actually going to. I just use it for like if a piano player comes in and wants to play with a back drummer, he can play it in there instead of sitting in my room. And
I got you.
Out.
Rob, what was the last really good bargain on piece of gear?
I think the last bargain was I was looking for a new keyboard. When I was having the new furniture built for the room, I had to figure out what kind of keyboard I was going to make my main controller keyboard. And
Is the furniture finished?
Yes,
oh, okay.
It is. Finally. And I decided I wanted an Oasis, the giant Korg workstation keyboard.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. Yeah.
But it's really pricey, I think.
It's like 10 grand.
Yeah, 9, 10 grand, something like that. And I was on the fence about it. I was thinking about it, and I kept going in and out of stores looking at it. And I went into one store, and some other producer had just returned one. It was too complicated or something. And they were blowing it out for 5 grand for half price.
Thank you very much.
That's exactly what I said. So that kind of answered, you know, the question, should I get it?
Wow.
And I don't regret it. The thing's great. I love it.
Wow. Has?
I got a DA88 one time from a guy.
Wait, that was your last piece of gear?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Well, no.
I'm just kidding.
Well, it's one of the best deals, though. DA88, and I wasn't sure it was going to work because the guy was like, I think he was in the midst of getting a divorce, and so he was cleaning out his studio. And he's a friend of a friend, and he said, just call this guy. He's got stuff. And I was like, all right. So I went over there, and it was just total chaos. The kids were running around, and his wife wasn't there, and he was trying to do all this. And he said, look, I'll sell you the DA88 with the remote and the snakes for $100. And I went, yeah, so does it work? And he's like, if it doesn't work, you can bring it back. And
wow.
I was like, all right. So I lifted it and walked like 2 blocks with it, which for me is a huge deal. Or something like that.
Not for Clemens.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's walked like 4 miles.
And
with
I'm
the
one that picked you up. So I took it home and I was like just sweating because I gave him cash and I was like, yeah, all right, the guy's not going to be there. It was all, you know, big farce. And so I hooked it up into my patch bay and I checked everything and I couldn't believe it. He even gave me tapes and tape cleaner, everything
sweet.
Totally awesome for $100.
Wow.
And I tell you, I dump stuff to that thing and go back in and out of that thing all the time. I love it. It's awesome.
You know, there's a great little Apogee box. I don't know if you check the optical, well, if you don't use ADAT light pipe, but there's an ADAT light pipe to TDIF.
Oh.
And you can pick them up for like $25. Now, I've got one I picked up a while back for about $80.
Oh.
But they're really useful for doing transfers.
Fantastic.
And you can use them because they're with the D88, the DA38 and 78 and 98, they all have the same interface, obviously.
Right.
But you can use them as A to D converters and D to A converters if you have a kind of useful.
I will do that.
I bet you his wife gave him that D88. That's why he let it go so cheap.
Probably.
You know what I think you need,
Hayes,
though? I think you need 4 more D88s, and I know just the guy to sell them to you.
Okay, well, we can talk about that. But one of the best deals I ever got, and some of my friends have been laughing at me ever since I got it. I was in Guitar Center, and they're like, "Look, we got this keyboard. We can't get rid of it." And I was like, "Look, I just need a MIDI controller," and they honestly didn't have anything that I wanted at the time. And so like, we got this keyboard, and you know, just look at it. So they take me into the corner room. I was actually, no, it was West LA Music, and they plugged it in for me, and I looked at it, and it's the EMU MoFat. Is it the MK6? What is it called? I can't remember, but it's gray and it's this keyboard. And I thought, oh my gosh. And they plugged it in. And it's got all these hip hop sounds on it and everything. And I was like, this is so totally not me. And the guy who was selling it to me, he was looking at me and he was definitely a hip hop guy. And he was like, you know, yeah, dude, it's all you. And I'm like, it's all me for what? And he goes, I'll give it to you for $150.
Holy smoke.
I'm like, what's wrong
said,
with it?
It's all me.
And I was like, are you sure?
Yo, what's up?
Oh, I am so down with that. So I wrote a check out right there, or, you know, card, whatever. I walked out with, he didn't even have a box or anything. And it wouldn't give me the power cord. And so I just put it under my arm, walked down the street, put it in my car. And I was like, oh, this is going to be awful. And I got home and I started tweaking all the sounds. And I was like, you know what? This is actually one of the coolest synths I could have ever have picked up.
Wow.
I've got some other synths that are really cool. I love my JD. I love, you know, the Blofeld and all the Dave Smith stuff and everything. And I just couldn't believe how flexible that machine was, and it had a lot of really cool sounds on it. So
it's nice when you get it's a great deal.
Yeah, and you can still buy expansion modules for it, I just found out. There's a guy in Florida who sells expansion modules. He's got a whole bunch of them, and I'm probably going to end up picking some of those up to throw in there.
Wow.
You know what else? You mentioned the Dave Smith stuff. Right. I just picked up, he has a little synth called a MOFO.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is short for monophonic. I think that's where the mo and the fo come from. Synthesizer, but it's really cheap, and it's got an amazing sound. It's worth checking out.
Your place, right? Is that the one I was?
It's the little, I'm colorblind, but I think it's yellow.
It's yellow.
Really, really vivid looking.
Yeah.
It's an amazing little box. And really cheap. That was actually a pretty cool find.
How much was that?
You know, I just don't remember off the top of my head.
I love his stuff.
I bought it with some other stuff that wasn't cheap, but I know that it was.
Clemens, what was like the last really great gear deal that you...
Okay, first, like, my best deal ever.
Yeah, let's do that.
That's like, has to be Telefunken Ela M 251 for $1,000. And wow. I hope this guy doesn't hear me now. No, really, it was like this guy from the AKG service.
Right.
And they service the microphones. And he told me when they shut down the company, there were like 10 microphones lying around them. Everybody could grab one, put 10 like euros in the coffee, I don't know.
Take one.
Yeah, take it. So
when I worked for in South Africa, I was in worked for a recording studio. I was built set up a studio for somebody, and I said, let's get some decent mics for the studio. And the guy, a friend of mine who owned it, said, yeah, sure, okay, is it, you know, we've got a small budget. So I was at the time I was a DJ, and I had connections with this radio station. And I went there, and they were upgrading their whole system. They were buying AKG, that's what reminded me. They were buying 414s to replace all these old horrible mics they've got.
Right.
And the old horrible mics I picked up for 3,600 Rand, but I picked it up for the studio, so it wasn't my deal, but I did do the deal and got the guy. I got two 47s, original 47s, two 251s, one 49, and one tiny little other microphone. 3,600 Rand, and that's supposed to be the equivalent of an exchange rate, I don't know, maybe $1,200. Not all of them worked, but I had to get build power supplies for some of them and whatever.
Wow.
But it's amazing. And I'm, you know.
And just so you can put it in perspective, how much would that microphone go?
You beat me.
Well, I mean, they weren't working, and it was a long time, 24 years ago, so it's not really fair.
So, so how much would that microphone go?
The 251?
Yeah.
Oh, probably like 15,000?
I was going to say
20. More than amazing. One. More than 1,000.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And Bobby, how much would those microphones go for?
I've got two. I've got a 47 from that same batch, and it's insured for 10K. So, and I've got a 67.
Oh, it's insured? I'll be right over.
I use it on my television box.
How do you – it's like whenever I handle an expensive microphone, I'm just like, wow. You know, I'm just afraid I'm going to drop that thing. Or
you're scared of it because – I mean, any mic you're scared of dropping, but if it's something you can't replace, that's of course, that's anything. I'm always scared of getting shocked by the thing because the cable sometimes gets funky and you get like a nice 120 volts come floating up the thing. Anyway, so,
to make people audition to see if they're worthy enough to even
bare feet, I have to hold it. Absolutely.
Are you worthy of the Telefunken? Are you worthy of the?
If you live, you get the gig. You know,
the truth is that they're not the best mics for a lot of things. You know, I mean, you really think, oh yeah, I'm going to use it on everything. You don't. You end up,
no, you don't.
It doesn't. And they are a pain in the ass because they go.
What do you use it for?
I do use it for lead vocals. But it's great. And sometimes I use it for saxophone, which is not great. And 67 I use for vocals. Sometimes I put on guitar amps a little further away.
Gotcha.
And 67 sometimes I put on toms, believe it or not, and the 47 as well. Wow. Just for an old-fashioned sound, but a long way away.
I was going to say, getting up close to a drum set. That's what do you use your microphone?
Like the telephone?
Yeah.
Yeah, lead vocal. I think the best. And piano is great too with it. But you're right, it's not for everything.
It's not for everything, are they? They got like such a color to the thing that you're like, oh, it's too much sometimes. Especially when you're recording analog, sometimes you're like, oh, it's enough. I've got too much going on, which is kind of funny.
But you know, like, because right now I'm totally about microphones and like this Neumann KU100, this binaural head, that's so amazing, this thing. It's really.
Really?
Yeah. It's really expensive, like hell, but I think it's really worth it. And you can use it for so much more. For example, I have it, and it's sometimes I just, if you have tracks which are kind of lifeless, you just play it through your monitors, place the head somewhere in the room, record it, and it's just.
Should
it
explain so much, what it is? Yeah, do you know what it is, right?
It's like a like it looks like a real head, you know, like a head, and it has ears, and in the ears it has microphones, but then binaural
recording. System. And you know, you remember the? I don't know if anybody remembers the advertising. Tape it was in those days to advertise, and they had a recording of somebody getting a haircut.
Yeah, yeah.
It was crazy. You put the thing on, he's going, ah! It's an amazing sound.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard the demo. It's amazing.
It's crazy.
And I've actually heard recordings that have been done in like some theme parks where they put the speakers around you, and it, you know, like monster comes up and breathes in your neck. That's a great idea, though. That's a really good way.
Yeah, that's really, like, especially, you get such a wide image if you just record a track through monitor.
Absolutely.
Wow, sounds like we've all gotten some really great deals. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break right now. And then when we come back, we're going to visit some more with Clemens and talk about a few other things. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we talked about all kinds of stuff. We talked about music in Germany, and we talked about gear, and basically we're all really good shoppers.
Well, we didn't talk about the 10,000 bad deals we got.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Well, we did that on the other podcast when we talked about the
Yamaha sampler. That's probably the worst.
Yeah, that was the most useless technology.
The SPX-91, that was the other one.
Okay, really quick, what was the most overpriced thing you ever bought? Didn't have to be bad.
Most overpriced?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a pretty tough contest.
That's a good question, too.
I have to think about that one for a second. Most overpriced. I'm drawing a blank. There have been so many. Well, the thing is, back in...
I think so.
Well, back in the old days... It's funny to talk about them as old days, but in the old days, a good keyboard was always like $3,000, $4,000, $5,000.
Oh, absolutely.
I have one. The Hartman Neuron synthesizer. I think it was like $6,000, $5,000, something like that. And it was an amazing kind of synth, and it did some really cool stuff. Nearly useless for actual real music production. But, well, you know, I'm always trying to find what the next cool thing is, and sometimes you stumble across things that are next but just not cool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was okay for pads, and it did some interesting surround stuff. It was the first 5.1 surround synth. So that's what made it cool. But when it first came out, it was $5,000 or $6,000. And then as they weren't selling them, the price went down and down and down. And then they came out with a plug-in version of it.
Great.
And it finally, I think, totally tanked.
Well, that's the way it was with Gigasampler, right? When Gigasampler first came out, it was like $600 or something like that.
Right.
And,
I don't remember it.
And I bought that version, and that was like, wow. Because then it came, by the time it came out like the version 3, it was like $350 or something like that. But what's the most
painful thing I ever bought? I think my MKS-70 with the controller. I got that home. I thought, oh, this is going to be great. And I just disliked it from the get-go, and I disliked it right up until I sold it about a year ago. That was about a 20-year of dislike.
What about a piece of gear that you actually still use or like, but you just felt like you like spent way too much for it?
Oh, I know that one. I'd have to say the WaveFrame. The audio frame, the original audio frame.
Yeah.
It was the first 24-bit sampler It was doing 24-bit in 1986.
Right.
And it still has an amazing library, and, you know, it's impossible to get serviced, but luckily it's still working. But that thing, that was like a mortgage. I mean, buying that thing.
Yeah.
It was a lot of zeros. It was the cheaper alternative to Sinclavier's, because Sinclavier's for comparable power was like, you know, $300,000 or $400,000, and the Waveframe was like $200,000, which seemed like a bargain. So, you know, you get a mortgage and buy it, but I guess at this point, I mean, I've had it.
House Waveframe.
Yeah. Well, it took me 10 years to pay for the thing.
Wow.
When I first bought it, but.
And now it's a planner in the corner, right?
No, it still gets a little bit of use. It still gets a little bit of use.
Clemens, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, Pro Control. That was just a waste of money. I think
glorified
you can compare it to the Icon stuff. The old one, right. The Pro right. Control was yeah. so such a bad thing. Like even this monitor control, like it broke like after 1 week or I can't.
Good thing Andrew's not here.
Well, no, he sold his. I still have my old Pro Control. I have it down in
your
Icon Studio
lovely,
B. Yeah, the D control. The D control and the Pro Control, they both have control in the name, but they're very different.
What was the most overpriced thing you bought?
Well, there's actually it's a three part. There are three different things. My first studio was the most expensive thing, and it was the biggest mistake ever. And I ended up having to sell it all. And part of that was it was a Kurzweil K2500XS. And I loaded that thing up when I paid for it. And at the time, I don't even remember how much it was, but it was a lot of money.
That was like $6,000 to $8,000
yeah.
if it was loaded.
And that was just one element right. of this studio. And
did the keyboard stop working after a couple of months?
No, I sold it for like $2,000.
Wow.
It was a problem. Yeah. But a regretful thing. But then the second part is I bought a Nord G2 modular. And at the time, I was heavy into Reactor, and I was just way more into Reactor, and I just spent all this money on the Nord G2 and thought, boy, this thing's got to be great, right? And I really got into it and learned how to program it and really enjoyed it for what it was, but I just couldn't get the sounds out of it that I could get out of Reactor at the time. And probably the thing, it's actually a really funny story, but the thing that I spent the most money on that was the most worthless was a $10 mic from Radio Shack. And I used it on a gig. And it sounded so cool through all these effects. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
That actually sounds like you got your money's worth out of it.
Yeah, I kind of.
Actually, you bring up a good point. You know what? For recording engineers, I'm sure lots of people try, but lots of people that are recording at home is a really good tool is to go to Radio Shack and go and get crappy microphones of all types. And I'm talking about your telephone. Right. Your telephone has a great, horrible microphone in your answering machine, and you can hook them up in essentially pretty easily. Most of them either just two wires or three if they need a battery. Right. And you can get some crazy recordings.
That's cool.
Really great. One thing I used to do is put my speakerphone on. A speakerphone, it's a Panasonic, and I still got it, not for the reason, but either way. And if you press the orange button, you have the speakerphone, it sounds great because it's got a compressor in it. And if you put it on the floor in front of a drum kit, it just sounds brilliant. And you can play anything because it's just such a munchy sound.
That's cool.
It's really killer.
That's a great
it's really
idea.
So I used to call myself on my digital answering machine and go, bad.
That's fun. Cool. Until call waiting kicks in, and then you hear that beep.
No, you get a little DI box, you take a little DI and split it off into your console from the speaker and the answering machine. It's killer.
That's cool. Cool. Really I like that.
Cheesy
cool.
ways of getting plugins.
Wow. All right. Well, that does sound cool. Hey, listen, one thing we're going to talk about on the second half is dun 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 crisis in the studio. I had a friend of mine who had 2 terabyte hard drive that went down, had all his samples on it. He was going to be doing a session, and he was in super panic mode. And it got me thinking about when a crisis hits. And I'm not talking about just a mere little inconvenience, like you forget something. I'm talking about major big crisis. And then I was talking to you, Bobby, and you're bored. Why don't you tell them what happened?
Oh,
well,
this is my mistake, really.
But here's a couple things. Let's talk about some of the crises and how you recovered from the major crisis or what happened in that.
I just got an analog mixing desk like most people have, and most mixing desks, most bigger large consoles have, analog consoles have two power supplies, split right. power supply system. But because I've had my mixer so long, I've rebuilt the power supplies multiple times, and they're not the standard power supplies. So I've got five power supplies on it, and I happened to have a channel go down on me, and one of my auxiliary sends started crackling. So I thought, sounds like my auxiliary sends crackling could be the power supply failing, which was power supply A. So I said, what I'll do is I'll just swap power supply A with B, see if the crackling stops. That was a very quick way to test. So doing that would be normally fine as long as you switch off the power supply when you do it, which I didn't do, and I unplugged the thing. I didn't know the thing was plugged in. And so I plugged it around, and because I have a modification on my console where I'm sending 17.5 volt DC to my left and right summing bus for whatever reason, essentially what I did was I shorted the two power supplies together, which is not the best thing to do, and I had the speakers on at the same time. I just scared the hell out of myself. I had a big bang, and that was it. But anyway, so I damaged a bit of stuff, and then I had to fix it. And it's my own fault, nothing to do with anything else other than me being stupid. But what I had to do was fix it and replace the components in the power supply that I took out.
And it shut your studio down for a couple of days, right?
Yeah, 7 days.
Wow.
Because it was a whole mixer. I mean, I could have limped around it with using the other power supply on one side and doing that whole thing. But, you know, I mean, how good is that? And then, of course, once the can of worms literally was open, I said, something. I want to fix the center section. I had a couple of op amps I went to the change and put a couple of bypass caps in there. And I've got a little nerdy op amp thing I'm playing around with. So I said, let me do that at the same time. And there was the power distribution thing I wanted to do. So I ended up just saying, let me just go for it. So I did. And literally, it's a pain in the butt.
Now, did it cause havoc with all your deadlines?
It did. Yeah. Got an email today from the show One Life Today. I said, I'm sorry, I'm late on the thing. He said, don't worry. I need it yesterday. So we just that last request for the queue, don't do it. So, it's no big deal. But obviously it's not the best thing to do. What can I do?
Right. Well, now in the future, do you have a...
I could have limped through it, but most people that have a large console have it split. It's normally they don't have, 80 channels on one power supply. So you can limp through it, and with a bit of basic knowledge of patching around, sure, you could limp through it, but, that's the joys and disadvantages of having, old crap as your work.
But now you're up and you fixed it and you're...
Up and fixed it, and it's a beautiful thing. And I got about 28 dB headroom on the output bus now, which is, if that means anything to anybody, it hurts. I can actually plug a light bulb in my output. Literally, I could have put a light bulb on the XLR and it would glow.
Wow.
Seriously.
Well,
very useful.
If you're going to learn a lesson from that, it's if you test power supplies, make sure you turn things off.
Yeah, or get somebody wise enough to do it, not to try and do it yourself. It's obviously
Clemens. Any big crises like that in your studio? Anything ever happen?
I mean, always happened something. I mean, even like a little studio like mine, it's always something's broken. I don't know. Service.
It's a permanent job, is it?
Yeah. But yeah, major crisis, I don't know, not so much. I once erased a 2-inch tape by...
That's a crisis.
Like this ribbon mics, the Coles, they have pretty heavy...
They're great mics.
Magnets, yeah. Yeah, they're great. But not on top on the 2-inch.
So what did you do? Did you have to re-record all that stuff?
Yeah, but it was not so bad. I mean,
okay, the lesson there is keep magnets away from the tape. Yeah. Of all kinds. Rob, what about you? Any big crises, any disasters, any data just going south?
I have some crises, but one funny magnet story is... The way we used to have Wonderland set up at Stevie's place, we used to have these giant Meyer monitors, speakers, like the gigantic ones, with just huge magnets. And people would come and sit in on the sessions and just listen. And they'd sometimes sit on these speakers or sit next to these speakers, and then they'd wonder why their credit cards wouldn't
work. Or their watch would stop.
That happened to more than one person. It was pretty funny.
Oh, that is funny.
My worst – I mean, in my studio – I purposely have a lot of redundancy because it is so computer oriented, and I have a lot of redundant data going on all the time. And now I've got RAID 5 arrays, so that even within one system, there's some redundancy. And I have redundant systems too. I'm up to like 25 computers, I think, and they can all be unique, but they can also handle each other's job sometimes. So if I'm working on something and I need a ton of virtual instruments and one of those machines dies, chances are there's another one that can kind of kick in. Because there's nothing worse than just not being able to make a deadline or get something
done.
But the worst technical crisis, though, ever, I think you were there too in Brunei. We were doing a show. It was a Stevie Wonder concert in Brunei, which is absolutely far from everywhere. I think it's on Borneo.
Yeah, it's on the island.
Really, really, really far from here. It took about 30 hours to get there. Anyway, we were doing a show, and we had set up Stevie's whole touring rig basically on the beach. And it was this big ritzy birthday party that he was going to be playing. And it was really humid. It's like 100% humidity. And there was sand blowing around and wind blowing around and everything else. And for whatever reason, we turned on the waveframe at the time. This is going back a while. Turned on the waveframe and it just blew up. It just exploded.
Oh, I know the reason.
They
wired the AC wrong. Remember?
Is that what it was? We've had that happen so many different places.
They messed up on the legs of the backstage because all the keyboards, we all had surge protectors, and they all popped, right? So we didn't get damaged.
But that's right. But the waveframe drew way too much power to be on any of those protectors at the time. But so anyway, the thing, it made the same sound probably that your console made.
That
just instant death. And the thing is, there was no authorized waveframe service in Brunei.
No, not at the moment.
As a matter of fact, the closest authorized waveframe service was in Los Angeles. And so I remember borrowing somebody's cell phone, and it was like $30 a minute to call the States. And I remember calling to get parts, and there was no way to fix the thing. I completely ripped it apart. I tried to cannibalize, bits and pieces that hadn't blown up into a working system. And I was able to get it sort of limping along. But we ended up having to get parts sent from the States. And I think the show did get off okay. So the parts did arrive in time. That part's all a blur to me. But what I remember is I just felt so far from home. I'm standing there on the beach, 12,000 miles from home or wherever, whatever it is.
Well, you know how you pulled it out, though?
I don't remember. I was medicated at the time.
You had the CD. We used the CD.
That's a great solution. Is that what we did?
Yes, you ran a CD.
And I
remember a quote. I don't know if you said it or Stevie said it. Something about a couple $100,000 machine and we're playing
records.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was.
I think that was my quote. You know what I think it was? I think we did two nights, and I think we used the CD the first night and then the parts had arrived for the second night.
Exactly.
Because we had the offices. Plus, this happened, of course, in L.A. It was like Sunday at 3 a.m. It had to be.
That's right, because we had it fixed by Singapore, which was right after
the
Brunei stuff.
But that was a nightmare because I just felt completely helpless. Plus, that was my job, was to be there and run that thing. That was, I did a lot of different things, but a lot of the stuff was relatively simple on a show like that. But the waveframe, that was the thing that only I knew how to use. And, that was my special thing. And I'm just standing there on the beach staring at this giant black box boulder, basically, just sitting
the
there.
The monolith on the beach.
Yeah, the useless monolith on the beach.
But it also ran, it had all those really cool loops for like Overjoyed and things like that.
We used it a lot.
It was a big part of the show.
Yes, it was.
It's a cool piece of equipment.
Not that first night, it wasn't.
Hez, how about you? What about in...
In what medium?
Just so people know, Hez works for DreamWorks and is a... animator?
No, like a virtual cameraman, basically.
Virtual cameraman.
Right.
Who's also really – we had him on the podcast about four podcasts ago and five podcasts maybe, and just decided to stay. So he never leaves.
He's a repeat offender.
Yeah. I'm basically the groupie. That's what I am.
No, Hez is basically a computer genius, so there's really not much he can't
say. Wow. I was talking to him. He's a soda jock.
I know.
On the air. This is amazing. We're nerding out. He's going,
Hez is the man. This is somebody to look up to. He's the man.
Well, he is because he's a lot taller than me. Mind you, everyone is. I haven't met anyone shorter than me.
All right. I'm as pink as my shirt right now. Thank you.
All I can say is Kung Fu Panda, the rice bowl scene, that all that has.
Yep. Chopstick. Yep. Chopstick fight. Because I also did music,
right.
There was a really, it was a televised concert in Japan. I was doing, Michael Tilson Thomas was conducting, Age of Anxiety by Bernstein. And, I had the xylophone solo. And, we'd been playing it on tour the whole time. And this was like the second to the last concert. And it was in Tokyo, and I believe the Prime Minister was there, and it was being televised over Russia. And it's a very simple part, and the rest of the piece is actually more difficult than the solo. It's a very simple little tune, and so it was one of those things where you just blank out for about a second. And I started, I saw my cue and he looked at me and I went down and I looked down and I was like in the wrong position. I had been shifted up like maybe a half step or whatever. And you're not in contact with the instrument. So you only, so it's all by feel with your arms and everything and distance between your arm and your body. And so I was listening and I was like, that doesn't really, and I realized halfway through, oh, and so I started going circle of fifths until I could get back in. And I did this jazz solo, and I got the last three notes, bump or something like that. And he's just looking at me while he's conducting and kind of looking around like this, like, is anybody else? And the funny thing about it was, I just handled it like, whatever, dude, nailed it, right? And, the guys who are my buddies who are in the trumpet section are looking to my left, looking at me, like, and looking at each other. And the principal trumpet player, he was a jazz guy, and he was just sitting there going like this, like, that is awesome. And afterwards, I ran for the hills. I mean, I went back to the hotel room, and I was like, I don't want to see anybody. And it just so happened that the principal trumpet player was also one of my roommates on the tour. And so he came in, and he's like, I got to sit you down, man. I got to sit you down. We got to have a talk. And I thought, oh, my God. And I was sweating it because I was like, Tilson Thomas is just going to ream me tomorrow. And because it was a big concert, and we've been working up to this whole thing. And he looks at me and he goes, that was the coolest thing I think I've ever seen. And he's like a Manhattan guy, studio player. He's like, that it was totally awesome. And he was like, dude, I cannot believe it. And he was like, everybody's just talking about it. And I'm like, not feeling good about this at all. So the next morning, we have a rehearsal. And I'm standing there, and here comes MTT, and he walks in, and he's like, so I have a story to tell everyone. And he's a very cool guy. And he tells a story about, I can't remember the horn player's name or the trumpet player's name, but I think it was way back when. I'm blanking on the conductor. And it was Bartok. It was a Bartok Concerto for Orchestra. And I think in that there's a trumpet solo. And the trumpet player sits there cold for like 8 minutes. And so the conductor had looked at the, this is for the New York Phil or Philadelphia or whatever. And he looked at him about a minute beforehand to see what he was doing,
Make sure he hasn't nodded off.
Right, exactly. So the guy, he's just sitting there, looking down, just hanging out, horn still down on the stand on his left side. And so then about 15 seconds before the cue, the guy's looking at him like, he's eyebrows and everything. And he just looks at him and goes, eyebrows up like, yeah, hey, dude, what's going on? And still just being cool as a cucumber until finally, and it's an exposed solo, and he just literally just throws him a cue like as big as you can possibly get. And the guy goes like this, and totally his eyes pop out of his head, and he grabs his horn and just goes, and just plays notes, right? And just because it's the solo is also kind of, it's Bartok, it's out, right? And he just throws everything he can at it, and then puts it down like this. And you know what? He looked at me, and everybody turned and looked at me, and he goes, "It happens to the best of us. So congratulations, welcome to the club." And everybody applauded.
Oh, that's like, cool.
Thank you, God. So that's the music crisis. But, you know, in the film industry and animation, if the network goes down or the servers go down, I mean, that's it. Nothing happens. I mean, you're not, nobody's working. And you know, that hasn't happened in a very long time where I'm at. Ever. But when I was actually working in technology, I did actually start erasing the movie one night by accident. But it's such a huge data set, and they have tape robots, and the guy handling the tape robot came to me and he said, "Hey man," put his hand on his shoulder, "do you know you were like erased half the movie last night?" I was like, "Yeah, right." He's like, "No, really, you did." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "That's okay, I restored it in like 30 minutes, so it's all cool." And I was like, "Oh my god." He's like, "And I did you tell anybody?" He's like, "Well, hell yeah."
Everybody, you know, everybody.
Hazed for weeks after that. So
there really is a missing scene in Trek 1 then.
No, not – no. Further back than that.
Wow, that's funny.
No, that stuff like funny. That goes – I mean, it's technology. It has to go wrong, right? In Murphy's Law. Right. I mean, the more moving parts you have, the worse it gets. So
the good thing is nowadays it's not that hard to figure out a plan to make things redundant,
right. Right.
To have a backup.
Right.
And the stuff has gotten so much cheaper. I mean, hard drives are just
– What's funny is
now.
It's actually faster – to restore things than it is to actually get it down. And it's amazing because not at this studio, but at a different studio that I was working at, they also lost a bunch of stuff. And, you know, stuff that had been worked on for months and months was restored in like literally 6 hours. And it's just like, well, wow. You know,
I was once put in a crisis mode. I was working on a campaign. It was actually way back in Blade 2, I think, was the TV campaign that I was working on. And we brought in a mixer who was, you know, mixing half the spots. And, for some reason, he just kind of wigged out at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And the client just didn't like the mix. And so he just literally froze at the desk and could not do it. And finally she came into my room and said, "Mike, I need this. We need to get this done." And we had to get it to the satellite service by like 1:45, and it's 1 o'clock, and she has all these fixes. And so literally just stepped in there and just, you know, made the changes. And they couldn't even rewind the tape. I mean, it was just like as soon as I laid it back, they just grabbed the tape and they sent it over. And this is before the days of, you know, fibering things over, and gave it to the runner, and he ran it over to the satellite, you know, because they had, you know, the buys already. And it was just like just watching him just – totally collapse was I had never seen that before. He just could not function on that level. And you know, just there's a certain mindset when you work in jobs like this that sometimes you just have to, I don't know, you just have to really dig inside and just, you know, if you take a couple deep breaths and just go for it, and you know, you don't have to shut down like that, because I don't want to have to clean up the mess.
Well, in any kind of studio situation, yeah. There's always some kind of crisis, yeah. You know. I mean, you have to get used to dealing with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Stuff, because there's always something going wrong.
In my early, when I was a younger person, I used to do front of house mixing, you know, front of house mixing and thing. And part of the thing, well, I was also the system engineer, which was set up an EQ that do the delay lines and everything. And there was always something going wrong when you have like 20,000 people shows and sometimes bigger. And there's always something, there was always be something, get like somebody come up on the clear, come, "Hey, left channel's gone out," or this, you know, because you just don't know what's going on. You always right. got to think on your feet.
Well, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I'm just... Go ahead.
Well, the nice thing about live is that mostly people are stoned, so they don't really care.
Right. That's funny. Well, we've talked a little bit about this before, but I just wanted to reiterate, especially after my friend had this total meltdown. And what he ended up doing was going back to his old synths that made sounds, and basically went and just faked it with synths that, you know, with no samples. Everything was generated. I think he had like a JD-800 or something, because there's a lot of analog stuff, and that's not a bad keyboard to pull out to tool some analog stuff. So he ended up, you know, he they didn't know it, and he was like, "Oh yeah, great, great," you know. And they actually thought it was kind of cool going a little retro, you know. So, so just plan for the worst, you know. Whatever you do, if you've got a lot of data, you know, make multiple backups, obviously. And if you have that one piece of gear that you totally rely on, just, you know, think what would happen if that went down, because, you know, odds are that at some time that piece of gear is going to go down. Unless you're, you know, like Bobby, where you can just go and fix it yourself really quick.
Yeah, right.
One other thing I'll say, it's weird because there's so many zillions of people with zillions of keyboards out there.
Right.
But I constantly get calls from people who have a keyboard that there's something wrong with and they're trying to find a repair place. And it's not that easy to find a good repair shop that's going to be reasonably priced, that's going to do the work right. Find a place before it's an emergency. Figure out where you would go with stuff, because, I mean, I don't even have a great solution. I know of a few different places that specialize in different things, but...
And if it's something that you really do rely on, like, which is really unlikely, I suppose, one keyboard, but...
Well, it could be if it's your main controller.
If it's your main controller, yeah, that's true. But certainly just at least have... Yeah. You know, a couple of grand sitting in the side, so you can actually go and buy another one, because sometimes you just, there's no other way
around
it.
Yeah, what would you do if all of a sudden that keyboard
goes
was dead?
Well, the other thing too is if you use a particular soft synth, you know, or a particular sampler, you know, install it on more than one computer, so that you know that if should this one go down, you can just pull out, you know, your laptop or whatever you need to get it going, so that you're not shutting down the session, because,
you never want to tell a client you can't do something.
Yeah.
And you know, or an artist or anybody else.
I was just, this last week, I'm just curious as to what you guys think. I was looking at the Open Labs Miko, which is, it's a keyboard and it's a computer with a 17-inch touchscreen. And
is it the colorful one?
Yeah,
it's lovely.
Yeah. And it looks like a really great deal. You can load up any software you want, I guess. It works with Pro Tools and Logic and all this. Or not Logic, but Pro Tools, because it's Windows-based. And all your plugins on there and everything. And it has this amazing amount of space for saving all your patches and everything. And it really does look like, and from what I can tell, from what I've read of people who have them, not only have they just used this one keyboard as the only place to store all of their, this is where they make all their sounds, this is where they do all their work, but you can also hook up any piece of hardware externally, like say you have a WaveStation AD or whatever, hook it up via MIDI and audio, and through this program, I think it'll go through and it'll sample every note and suck all the MIDI performance data or whatever over for it or whatever, all the parameters, mm-hmm. and then it's now a sample instrument preset on there,
mm-hmm.
I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few different utilities that can do that now.
But
Red Banica does it.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively inexpensive. You know, it's not as expensive as the Kurzweil K2500 that I spent, you know, $7,000 on or whatever it was. But I'll tell you, I thought about it, and then 5 seconds later, I realized, yeah, but it's all right on one. It's on one unit.
Right.
And where are you going to take that? Is it the computer, or is it the keyboard? Is it the electronics, or is it, you know?
Well, it's a convenient thing. I have an Open Labs Nico, mm-hmm. And it's a convenient thing if you need to just carry a workstation in one case,
right?
Someplace. I mean, it's heavy, you know.
Is this the way of the future, though? I mean, is it all about consolidating all this stuff? Because I like the idea of having all of my stuff spread out. I know it sounds kind of...
I still prefer it spread out, honestly. I'd rather have a very lightweight keyboard and a laptop computer. It's not that big a deal to hook up a cable or two between them. You know, the OpenLab stuff, it's very well built. I mean, you could probably drop it off a stage and it would be okay. But... Yeah, it sounds fine. It sounds as good as whatever software you run on it. Yeah, they use good hardware. It's very well done. It's just
everything in one box. Because you're talking about how, like, you know, where you can, you know, find a good keyboard tech or whatever, you know, and a service center or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, you know, one of the reasons why I kind of shy away from that was just like, wow, I can imagine if something went wrong.
I think something you said in jest, I know, and what you're talking about, and I think what we all have to realize is certainly if we have analog studios, but at least all of us, we do have to understand that it's a technical business and we are using technology, and to save money and really to be a more independent and not be just at the whim of any technician, yeah, we really do have to understand how does just the fundamentals of how these cables work, how to use a multimeter to even just see if the thing is working, how to solder, just the basics of audio, basics of studio silliness. Because there'll be one day when you got a client coming, he's like, okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes time. And you walk past something and kick a plug off of something that needs to be resoldered on immediately before the client gets there. And what you're going to do, go down, you're not going to go down to, you know, Guitar Center, buy another cable, just pull out the soldering iron and solder it, you know, and say to the guy, oh, you want a cup of coffee? Here you go, have a cup of coffee, I'll solder this, done. I mean, we are in that business. It's like, you know, change your oil in your car. We've got to learn to change.
You got to know how to do that.
Basic stuff. And then there's a lot of things you can save a lot of money, like the memory, the little battery backups for your memory inside. There are a lot of these synths that expire after a couple of years, you know, like the rack type. They'll lose all the internal RAM, ROM. Sorry, EEPROM memory is backed up with a battery, and you lose all your patches if you don't realize that. And you just open the thing up, put a new battery in, it's done. I mean,
that's a great idea. We're going to have to wrap it up because we're going a little long. But since this is going to be our Christmas show, or the show before the holidays.
This is? We're not going to do another one before then?
No, we got another one
before
the
Christmas?
New Year's. We got the end of the year show. That's going to be show number 60, and I'll tell everybody a little bit more about
that
one.
Is that the special super duper duper one?
That's the super duper one at the end of the year. Well, this is super duper too because Clemens is here.
Absolutely, but I'm saying
Schleivis.
Are we going to have some nog? Are we going to be nogging at the next one?
Yeah, you know what? Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. I wanted to everybody just. Why don't you make one quick suggestion
for a Christmas gift?
Christmas gift suggestion.
We'll subscription to monster.com. Find a different line of work.
Come on. We'll start with you, Rob.
Gift idea.
So was that the question for people who are listening who have a friend or partner as a musician, they want what to get them?
Exactly.
What price range?
Any price range. Just.
Ooh.
You know what? Unless you really understand how they work and what they do, it's a really risky thing. Well, I've had people buy me little trinkets as gifts, you know, that just didn't go at all with the way
all right,
I work.
Here's one. I'll open it up. A cable tester. A cable tester is one
That's
of those things
thing.
That a lot of people won't buy on their own, but they can totally use it if you get it as a gift. Cable tester.
That's good. For less technical stuff, I can honestly say I've had family members who had no idea what to get me just find cute little percussion things from around the
Excellent
world.
Idea.
And there's lots of sort of cheap, really cool percussion-y stuff out there, and that always makes a nice
gift. That's a great idea. Okay.
Clemens.
That's true. I think mics are always great. You can't have enough mics and, like, nowadays, there's so many like low-priced good mics too.
Great.
So I think that's always you can always use it.
Even from Radio Shack, a little $10 mic or something like that. You're absolutely right. Hey, it's really quick.
Ooh. If for the guitar player, how about this?
That's fine.
Picksandstones.com. They make stone picks. And I got two agate picks, and I really like them. I stopped using plastic a long time ago because of that, and I think they're really cool. And they're also really beautiful, and they come in all different sizes and in different thicknesses. And it's kind of a nice gift.
Does it go through your strings quicker?
Oh yeah, you can play really fast. The tone is great. You know, it's like, I know a lot of hard rock guys, they use a lot of like the really extra hard.
Yeah.
And of course, this is stone. So it's fantastic. But I love it. It sounds great. And even just when I'm like playing some jazz stuff or whatever, it's a lot of fun. You know, you get around faster. And, Picks and Stones. I really like their picks.
Great.
So,
Bobby.
They're pretty expensive.
If the person, the person's a piano player and they can read, buy some good sheet music. Is it nice, something that they don't normally...
That's a good idea.
It's an old-fashioned idea, but it's kind of fun.
Like any particular genre or just sheet music?
Stravinsky. Might as well just get the guy kicked in the butt straight away. Don't play around. I mean like a good piano player.
Well, that's – and why not? You know? Go back to total analog.
That's very analog.
That's as analog as it gets.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up. Clemens, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And, it's great to be here.
Really wish you the best of luck.
All the best, too. Yeah.
Anytime you're in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do it.
And anytime you come back, you know, feel free to join us.
Okay. Yeah,
great.
Cool.
Looking forward to do we know the name of the pilot that you're shooting right now?
It's called Being Big Boy.
Being Big Boy. Any network that it's just a production company?
No, it's a pilot right now. Okay. They shoot a trailer.
I gotcha.
I have no clue.
Okay. Well, it sounds really interesting. I'd watch it. That'd be kind of fun.
Cool idea.
I love it.
A German band.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it anyway.
I sent you an email with like the show dates. Maybe you come by.
Okay. Yeah. That'd be great. And Rob, working on? You taking some time off? What are you doing?
No, I will be taking some time off in a few weeks, hopefully. But we've been basically trying to get a bunch of album work done before the end of the year. So the last few weeks have been crazy and the next few will be too. And then at night I've been working on a technology project that I'm going to be able to talk about after the first of the year finally.
Great.
And just not getting a lot of sleep.
Hez?
Still working on the same movie. It's changing a little. Well, the movie's not changing, but the schedule's changing for me. I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of little projects around the studio. And then I've got, I don't know how many things going on outside of work now. So we'll see. We'll see how that all pans out. Yeah. And some music stuff as well. So
it's going to come around to me for a beer, too.
Yeah.
Bobby?
That's on the list.
I'm actually basically back up and running, so I'm going to start work just catching up on the lag. What I'm doing is I'm doing a project about cities. I'll say that. I can't really give away the name because it's also a thing for an international project. It's about basically songs about cities. I'll say that.
Great.
For now.
Great. All right. Well, hey, if you have any questions or comments or you want to tell us some of your crisis stories, feel free to send me an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And you can also reach us through our MySpace page. That's myspace.com/audio nowcast. So for myself and the rest of the guys, we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.